It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are beginning the final broadcast week of February, this long, gray, grim February. I don't know why a 31-day month like July runs by like it's doing wind sprints, but February just strolls and ambles in its gray, depressing way, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, toward a gradual sort of conclusion. Yeah. Well, but anyway, we've got five more days of it, and three of those will be broadcast days, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and then gone on Thursday and Friday, unless there's an unforeseen blizzard or something equally silly. I'm going to go and visit with Mike and Kathy and Molly, see Molly perform with her high school theater troupe. And then, of course, next week we'll begin March. Ta-da! Hi, I'm Bob. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb too. And if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, pop on by. Just go to HeadOn.live, click on Chat Room, and Squeaky and I are there. And others can wander by. Well, we'll wander by, I'm sure, eventually. We're early arrivers, Squeaky and me. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This one is no different. Thanks to our subscribers over the course of the weekend. Thanks to Tarani and to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California. Thanks to Bill in Florida. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Jamie. Thank you very kindly, a la carte, Mark, for finishing off last week's fundraising. Thank you, Mark, so very much. Thank you very kindly to Philip in Maryland, to Stacy, to our friend at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, to Samson, to Pamela in the Great Northwest, and to Josh. Thank you all so very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Here's where we stand finishing February. We got $990 to go. So that works out to about $330 a night. And hopefully we can make that up today, tomorrow, and Wednesday so that I can get the bills paid and take my little my happy little road trip to see Mike and Kathy and Molly. So 33 folks at 10, 10 at 33, etc. And there's about $1,000 worth of bills, curiously enough, waiting to be paid as we finish, as we round out the month of February. April is the cruelest month, my ass. But anyway, we'll get through because, among other things, today is Moran Monday, and it's been a more than a little bit moranic weekend. Oh, yeah. I guess a good place to start. Uh, would be Nevada, where Bernie Sanders, he didn't get a majority. He got close. He got in the Nevada caucus. He pulled up with just short with 47% plurality, with people like Biden and Mayor Pete behind him, and Amy Klobuchar somewhere down there, and Elizabeth Warren came in fourth. Michael Bloomberg was in the mix. But what made it just so astonishingly, well, no, it's not astonishing at all. It's the wrong word. What made it moronic? Yeah. Now, let's see here. Was, of course, none other than NBC's own resident shrieker, Chris Tweety Matthews. Yeah, Jesus Christ. When it became apparent that that Bernie Sanders was going to be the more or less winner of the Nevada caucus, this apparently drove drove Chris Matthews into a fit of historical hysteria. And it being Moran Monday and all, hold on, let's do this. It's Moran Monday. Let's do this right, shall we? Yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, 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 the sound of the calliope tells you that it's time for Moran Monday on the horn. Just scant moments ago, you were standing over on the carnival midway throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vainglorious hope of taking home a little tiny baby iguana that will eventually grow to be the size of your entire home. But no, 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 you wandered a few feet away, and here, here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of this Moran Monday tent, we've got them all for you. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpensies, maggots, libertarians, republicans, and their court jesters and court fools. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You know, you can't tell the morons without a program. Then this is the program that tells the morons you can't tell them much. Still, for less than the cost of 2.5 sticks of chewing gum out of a 5-stick pack per day, you, as a $10 a month subscriber, can help keep the horn on the air and the Moran Monday tent flaps open. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. And so, as a consequence, we issue the standard disclaimer and friendly warning that when entering the Moran Monday tent, please do be conscious of old things like rings, bracelets, necklaces, toe rings, piercing jewelry, children, cats, small dogs, parrots perched atop your shoulder, and yes, even that little iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because after all, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And yes, oh yes, yeah, let's see, it was a couple of weeks ago when, who was it over on MSNBC who compared Bernie Sanders' followers to the Sturmabteilung, the SA? Well, that person got away with it. And that opened the door for none other than Chris Tweedy Matthews to impart to us his manifest monumental moronity. And again, the comments come. And I got a note from Steve in New York just now saying, gee, how did I know you were going to say Matthews before you even said his name? Because it's Moran Monday, and Moran and Matthews form a sort of, we're going to argue about the word alliteration again. A sort of alliterative, they've got an alliterative bouquet that's practically unavoidable, inescapable. Yes. Steve says, I remember the Halcon days when he just told us Caribou Barbie made him moist. Moist. Ew. Yeah, you're right. Flavio says, better tell people to get their hockey puck. Yeah, and take a couple of trips around with the duct tape, too. Otherwise, you'll shoot it across the room with this one. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, when I was in high school, they gave us aptitude tests to see which professions we were more suited for. These TV blabberheads apparently never found out what occupation they should be in. It is certainly not whatever they think they're doing on the TV. But let's remember that Chris Tweedy Matthews didn't start out in TV. No, he was a good Philadelphia boy who was raised in white privilege, and then went to work for, was it Tip O'Neill that he worked for? And we have thus been regaled for years now of stories of back when Tipper and Dutch Reagan would roll up their sleeves and come to an agreement and, hey, fuck my generation. Yeah, that's it, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, I remember it well when Tip O'Neill got together with Ronald Reagan and decided, Democrats and Republicans did, that my generation was too busy smoking dope and drinking beer pay any attention, so we're the ones that they fucked on Social Security, and fucked we remain. Yeah. Hey, thank you very kindly to Terrace. Not Terrace, I'm sorry. Thank you very kindly to Anatole. Thank you very much for getting us started this evening. Much obliged. That leaves us with 320 to go. 320 to go to finish the evening, and 980 to go to finish the week. And the month. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Anatole in the chat room. So there they are. Look, it's a discussion. What? I mean, it should have been a fairly simple, straightforward discussion, because for the most part, these people are capable of nothing but horse race deconstructions anyway. And you had Bernie Sanders at 47%. Biden, I think, at 20. Buttigieg at 13. Bloomberg and Warren at 10. And Amy at 5. Ah, God. And you can talk about who supported whom, and the youth vote, and how the boomers love Biden, whatever. But the one thing that really didn't need to be, well, but it did, of course. And so let's go now to Brian Williams having a little chit-chat with Chris Matthews.
What is going on here, and is this any way to pick a nominee?
Well, I don't think so, but it is the way we're picking this one, and it looks like Bernie Sanders is hard to beat right now. I'm with Carville all the way in terms of the dangers of what lies ahead in November. I'm very much aware of them. They're sitting on so much Oppo research on Bernie, what he said in the past about world affairs, how far left he is. I'm not sure how far left he is, but they're going to make the most of that in terms of world politics. They're going to kill him. But I think it's a little...
Kill him. Kill him. They're going to kill him. Now, we don't... I suppose that's just sort of an old Philly or D.C. operative figure of speech, but it's not helpful. They're going to kill him. Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of, let's check in real quick with Nitwit Nero from his Clavern rally in Las Vegas.
Right? And yet, Inish violated that. He made a little mistake. Right? And yet, Inish violated that.
Well, that's either drunk or aphasia. Or, I don't know, just the spirochetes having their way, splashing around in the little swimming pool between his ears, where his brains used to be. Right. Anish. And of course, those clips abound. There's reason to think, of course, that he is deeply, deeply mentally ill. But no, back to Tweety. Yeah, they're going to kill him, he says, talking of Bernie Sanders. They're going to kill him. I don't know if that means they're going to stress him so hard that he has another heart attack, or maybe, I hope it's metaphorical. But then there's always the possibility. I mean, this is a mobbed-up presidency, after all. With all the ambulances in the background, Flavio says, was that the sound of the ambulance with the nice folks in white smocks coming for Chris Matthews? Sadly, no, Flavio. Because he got to sit right there and do what you're about to hear him do. Hockey pucks, everybody, are we all set?
A little late to stop him, and I think that's the problem. By the way, if you look at the pattern, it's dynamic. Bernie won the popular vote in Iowa. He won it again in New Hampshire. It looks like he's going to win it here when they finally get a vote. Bernie's been winning consistently, and I think it's mathematically understandable. Every time we poll, every time Steve and everybody polls, two-thirds of the Democratic vote, two-thirds of people who call themselves Democrats are either liberal or very liberal. All Bernie ever had to do, and he's done it beautifully, is get a majority of that, and he's up to the mid-30s. If you get half of 67, you're into the mid-30s, and that's where he's gotten it a little better. Biden, his only prayer was to consolidate the third of the vote that's moderate and conservative. And he got nowhere near clearing that field. Nowhere near. That's split up four ways now. And so with new people coming in, DeVal Patrick came in. He didn't make it. Bloomberg is in. He's probably going to survive a bit longer because of his money. But that field wasn't cleared. The only way Biden could win in that one-third of the vote that's either moderate or conservative is to sweep it. He got nowhere near. Bernie, on the other hand, did his job. He got more than a majority of that 67%. That is the name of the game.
Okay, so far so good. I mean, it's horse race analysis, emphasis on the anal, and that's about as much as you can expect from the likes of Chris Matthews. But wait,
it is pretty much over unless that changes. I was reading last night, Brian, I know you're a history guy.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. All he had to do was stop and say, unless that changes, and Brian Williams could pick it up and ask another stupid question.
The majority, more.
But did he? No. No, no. You know, it's not so much that Chris Matthews is going to stick his foot in his mouth. He's a moron, after all. The real sport, the real entertainment comes in figuring out how he's going to get the other one in there with it.
The majority of that 67%. That is the name of the game. It is pretty much over unless that changes. I was reading last night, Brian. I know you're a history guy, too.
Yeah, you're a history guy, too. I'm a history guy. I like history. Who doesn't like history? Well, I mean, some people don't like history. I love history. So, you're talking about the struggle for the Democratic nomination in a year when the Democrats don't have an incumbent president. And, oh, I don't know, maybe you could talk about the 1932 race. You know, FDR? No, I guess not. How about 72? That was a contentious race. So was 68. Those are all historic references. We could do that. No, of course not.
I'm reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940.
What the actual fuck?
And the general, Renault, calls up Churchill and says, it's over. And Churchill says, how can it be?
How can this be? I mean, at least do a decent, try to make the effort to do the impression, Chris. I mean, and the French general calls and says, it is over. And Churchill, that noted racist, says, how could this be? No, sorry.
It's over. And Churchill says, how can it be? You got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over? He said, it's over. So I had that suppressed feeling. I can't be as wild as Carville, but he is damn smart. And I think he's damn right on this one.
And nobody looks at him and says, Jesus, Chris, you just compared a presidential candidate who lost extended family members in the Nazi roundup and murder of Jewish people all over Europe, the Holocaust. You just compared him to the Nazi overrun of France, Chris. What the hell is wrong with you, Chris? Because, see, I think you can say hell there on MSNBC. What the hell's wrong with you, Chris? Jesus Christ, is your leg tingling again for something? I do what? But there it was. You know, he's kind of like a church belfry. He opens his mouth and bats fly out. And so shortly thereafter, comms director for Bernie Sanders, Mike Kaska, said on Twitter, I never thought part of my job would be pleading with a national news network to stop likening the campaign of a Jewish presidential candidate whose family was wiped out by the Nazis to the Third Reich. But here we are. And indeed, here we are. And why? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, how could I forget? Yeah, the guy who compared, because, you know, they sort of remind me of one another in terms of their superficiality. The NBC guy who compared Sanders to the Sturmabteilung, the SA. Yeah, that was Chuck Todd. How could I forget? And no consequences there, either. So, and his reference to being in complete agreement with James Carville, I'm sorry. At one point in time, I respected James Carville. But all of that flew out the window when he and his just to the right of Generalissimo Francisco Franco wife, Mary Madeline, who had worked, you know, who thought so little of her own ethics and morality that she actually worked for big time Dick Cheney. And did yeoman work once upon a time, subbing for none other than the oxymoron himself, Flush Flimball, recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Me? And there's a Flush Flimball Moran-related Moran nomination out there, too. And this is probably going to be more disturbing to more members of this community than several other things. But James Carville, when he and his wife wrote their sentencing recommendation letter, their plea of leniency for Mr. Scooter, you know, Scooter Libby, who outed an active CIA agent and put her life at hazard for having the temerity to point out that, well, everything surrounding the rationale, if you can call it that, for slaughtering a million innocent Iraqi non-combatant civilians in Bush War II, that, you know, he outed Valerie Plame, Scooter Libby did, probably at the behest of Count Dicula, and was eventually thrown to the wolves for it, at which point there was a heartfelt letter that in better circumstances would have been accompanied by the tinny sound of a whorehouse piano, in which Mary Madeline and James Carville pled to the judge, please don't send Mr. Scooter to the Gray Bar Hotel, Your Honor. Our young'un just loves Mr. Scooter and is terribly, terribly upset now that Mr. Scooter don't come round here no more. No shit. I mean, I remember when it happened, reading the actual letter on the air. It was sickening. Mr. Scooter turned on his own country, but that just the same, Your Honor, he's a fine, upstanding white man and don't need to be going to no prison. Fast forward a few years, and of course there's Gorky Pig. Thank you, Joy. Joy in Ann Arbor alerted me to that new moniker for the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Gorky Pig. Yeah, we're fucked. Gorky Pig pardoned Mr. Scooter. Presumably, Mr. Scooter had the common decency to run right around to the Carville residence and thank them for that wonderful, lovely note. Or maybe he'd already done it. Didn't do much time in the first place. And so, there's Chris Matthews, who, curiously enough, still has a job. Because white privilege is a powerful, powerful thing to have. White male privilege, white male wealth privilege. Now, yesterday, over at MSNBC, they booked Anand Giridharadas, who actually took them to task. He said, this is a moment for curiosity in America. I think about this network, which I love, which you love, and I think we have to look within also. Why is a lobbyist for Uber and Mark Zuckerberg on the air many nights explaining a political revolution to us? Why is Chris Matthews on this air talking about the victory Bernie Sanders, who had kin murdered in the Holocaust, analogizing it to the Nazi conquest of France? Good point. Good point indeed.
This is a wake-up moment for the American power establishment. From Michael Bloomberg to those of us in the media, to the Democratic Party, to donors, to CEOs, many in this establishment are behaving, in my view, as they face the prospect of a Bernie Sanders nomination, like out-of-touch aristocrats in a dying aristocracy. Just sort of, how do we stop this? How do we block this? And there is no curiosity. Why is this happening? What is going on in the lives of my fellow citizens in this country? They may be voting for something that I find it so hard to understand. What is happening? What is happening? This is a moment for curiosity in America. I think about this network, which I love, which you love, and I think we have to look within also. Why is a lobbyist for Uber and Mark Zuckerberg on the air many nights explaining a political revolution to us? Why is Chris Matthews on this air talking about the victory of Bernie Sanders, who had kin murdered in the Holocaust, and analogizing it to the Nazi conquest of France? The people who are stuck in an old way of thinking, in 20th century frameworks, in gulag thinking, are missing what is going on. It is time for all of us to step up, rethink, and understand the dawn of what may be, frankly, a new era in American life.
He never, Anand Giridharadas, never fails to impress. And, you know, he's taking the big picture view. And the big picture there is quite compelling. But what is what's particularly noteworthy is the fact that he had the nerve to say, why is Chris Matthews on this air? Because Chris Matthews has a hell of a lot more power and pull at MSNBC and NBC than Anand Giridharadas. But truth was spoken to power. And this is, you know, this is just part of a set piece for Chris Matthews. It wasn't that long ago, in fact, it was this month, when he said that Bernie Sanders socialists would have Chris Matthews, executed in Central Park. I mean, for pity's sakes. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, referring to the Harvey Weinstein verdict that came in today, Harvey Weinstein was found guilty of two of the five charges in his indictment. One charge carries a fairly long jail term at the upper limit. The lesser charge carries a much lesser term. The long term carries 5 to 25, and the lesser charge carries probation to 5. I'm betting the lesser charge will be sentenced to the probation sentence. The longer term will carry a sentence of 5 years, of which Harv will serve maybe 2. Put down your hard-earned cash and prove me wrong. Nope, Ron, I will not bet against you in that, because I'm not stupid. Second part of bet. They keep piling on to Jesse Smollett, 6 charges so far. Would you like to bet that Jesse spends more time in the hoosegow than old Harv? Again, won't touch it. Rather keep my money. And then the larger question is, why is Chris Matthews keeping a job? Here's one answer. Because the folks who breathe the really thin oxygen at the high end of the multimillionaire for-profit media recognize a truth, that there is no such thing as bad publicity. Chris Matthews' Nazi analogy ran around the political world like wildfire in this country. It is odious, it is disgusting, and it's great for their numbers. Hey, let's tune in and see what hateful, shit-filled thing Chris Matthews says next. Cool, right?
you know it's true. And they probably won't even touch Anand Giridharadas, because that, too, will stoke some great PR. Meanwhile, a gentle reminder.
He made a little mistake, right? And yet, Anish violated that. He made a little mistake, right?
The President of the United States' brain is dissolving in real time before our very eyes. And Chris Matthews is comparing Bernie Sanders to the Nazi sweep across France. How's about that? Oh, earlier I mentioned that, you know, the nitwit Nero's brains are dissolving before our very eyes, and Darcy jumped in with a gentle reminder. Trump never had a brain. Probably more truth in that than most of it. Well, we know that. Oh, yes, we do. And Gorky Pig. Wait a minute. Yeah, that gets a cowbell. And then the other thing I noticed via Joy in Ann Arbor, a new logo, an orange ball with red and blue sort of comb-over flapping. Don't let the infection spread, 2020, STD. Stop the Donald. I like that one a lot, too. Very much so. How can you, because I do like history. How do you do that thing where you actually compare all the monumental complexities of the Third Reich's sweep both east and west? With something as relatively banal as political contest. Because I gotta confess, that just plumb evades me. And, of course, Nitwit Nero is on the road. On the road again. No singing. Flavio says, you're describing a parlor game. What'll a for-profit media pundit will say next? Next up, Chuck Todd compares Sanders' win in South Carolina to the Blitzkrieg invasion of Poland. I wish. Well, there's another wager I won't make. There's entirely too much. Do you think they're having meetings saying, yeah, hey, knock off the Nazi references to say. Fuck no, they're not. And a reminder, I haven't even endorsed or selected a candidate. Because my vote doesn't matter. My primary vote doesn't matter. But Nitwit Nero is on the road again, and thanks to our buddy Dave for sending this along. He mangled lots of Indian words and place names. The fascist leader of India, Narendra Modi, put together a huge spectacle, massive public rally in Gujarat. And that's where Narendra Modi is from. And the BBC was on the scene there and reported that, he had a real hard time with no small number of words. He did get Namaste, something close to right. On the other hand, he butchered Ahmedabad, which is actually the town where he was speaking. Had a hell of a hard time trying to get through Swami Vivekananda. And he transformed one of the most revered and ancient Hindu texts into a cross between an article of clothing and a motor scooter. Yes, the Vedas became the Vestas. Now, here's a funny. He spoke after the fascist populist Narendra Modi did, and the locals came out to see Narendra Modi, and they started. It was like the bleachers clearing in the fourth quarter of a football game when the home team is down by about 112 points. Yeah, I know. Jeff on the left says, Bob, can't you just feel the fucking unity from Tweety? I know. But then again, it's not like Tweety's going to go out and vote for Bernie if he's the nominee. No. No, not at all. So let's check in with the big rally in India, shall we? Oh, yeah, there they are. Tens of thousands of people, even as Nitwit Nero is speaking, heading for the exits. Yeah.
Rich and poor, young and old, take pride in the glories of your past. Unite for an even brighter future. And let our two nations always stand together as powerful defenders of peace and liberty and the hope of a better world.
Yeah, not so much. Thanks for the clip, Dave. Much appreciated. Blah, 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 blah. Steve in New York says, the Vedas. India needs to make their copyright laws to protect the ones who wrote the Vedas.
Jesus.
Oh, I know. And he talked about, I mean, the whole event took place in the world's largest cricket stadium.
I love cricket. I mean, it takes a lot of talent to hit those bugs with those wooden planks. It's a fabulous game. Fabulous. Believe me.
And he blathered about Bollywood. You know what he was thinking about Bollywood.
I'd like to go in the dressing room there. Dance of the Seven Veils. Yeah.
Stephen New York says, Joke Toad and Chris Matthews. Joke Toad is just profoundly ignorant and extremely unprepared. Matthews is off the charts. I don't know what. The best I can gather is that he's a legacy they led on to blather and fart and burp for ratings. There really aren't words to properly describe this shit show. No, he's not a Matthews isn't a legacy. Matthews is there because he was a well-known political operative for Tip O'Neill. Sheesh. Brother Deacon Asa says, Matthews has been a fucking tool, perhaps, of the Repig fucking party for a long time. Does anyone remember that time when he requested the Cosby pill for Hillary Clinton right on his pitiful hardball program? It wasn't that many years ago. I'd forgotten that one, but there's so much to forget, Brother Deacon. So very much. And then there's, I promised something having to do with Flush Flimball, because this all just kind of pulls together in a nasty wad of maggotry. I'm sure if you have ever had the misfortune of having the radio on, when Rush Limbaugh started his program, the top of his program, you've heard the same intro song that he's been using for fucking eons. It's the Pretenders' My City Was Gone. And there's a lot of people out there who still think of Chrissy Hynde as some sort of edgy punk chick. That ship sailed a long time ago. And the latest, the latest is, she's been saying some outrageous right-wing bullshit for a while. But in this case, Chrissy Hynde, just a few days ago, jumped on Twitter and posted an open letter to Trump. She said, I often think of how much my father, Melville Bud Hynde, who proudly served his country as a Marine on Guadalcanal, would have enjoyed your presidency, she said to Trump. The other day when you gave that award to Rush Limbaugh, my father would have been so delighted. He loved listening to Rush, which is why I allowed my song My City Was Gone to be used on his radio show. Probably also because she was handsomely compensated. My father and I didn't always see eye to eye. We argued a lot, but isn't that the American way? The right to disagree without having your head chopped off? Nice reference there, Chrissy. Soon I will be participating in a protest in London against the extradition of Julian Assange. I know Mr. Assange broke the laws I have done defending the treatment of animals because she got herself arrested in merry old England, screwing up a hunt for some hunters. Just because she objects to the idea of hunting, and I'm not going to much criticize that. But comparing civil disobedience over animal rights to what Julian Assange did? Yeah, that's a bit of a reach. But I believe he's been duly punished and should now be set free. Please consider my plea. She actually tweeted at Donald Trump stroked his ego in an effort to get him to quash the prosecution of Julian Assange when there's already a story out there that a pardon was offered to Assange if he would just say that Russia had nothing to do with the DNC server hack. That's all he had to do. But here's the funny thing. Yeah, I know. Dreams and idols, well, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Todd in South Carolina Stan says, damn, Bob, Chrissy Hynde. Yeah, Chrissy Hynde, maggot. So, you know, she took a big steaming dump on possibly, at least thousands and thousands of fans. And demonstrated a profound lack of knowledge of what's going on behind the scenes with Julian Assange. But, and here's the but, if you had been listening to this program, or if you have been listening to this program for a lot of years, you'll recall those times when Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, would call into the program. Now, Mr. Stress was big in the Cleveland music scene long before Chrissy Hynde got her first guitar. And he knew Chrissy Hynde. Bill did. And she even referenced him in an early Pretenders lyric. It's a real hard-driving, punky kind of tune. And, it's called Precious. I remember being a teenager and listening to it on a cassette in the car because it was real. And so and the whole thing is there's a whole backstory to that song, but down toward the bottom, or toward the end of the song. Toward the bottom of the lyric, she sings, I was feeling kind of ethereal because I'm precious. I had my eye on your imperial. You're so precious. Now Howard the Duck and Mr. Stress both stayed trapped in a world that they never made. But not me, baby. I'm too precious. Fuck off. And that's a reference to Bill Mr. Stress Miller, legendary Cleveland bluesman, who became an icon in that city and could blow the living bejesus out of a harp. And God, sang the blues like nobody's business. And at one point in time, Bill told her, because they knew each other in more than passing fashion. Bill told her, you're probably going to have to go to Europe for what you want to do to take off. She took his advice. And the next thing you know, the Pretenders explode and become, that first Pretenders album with the diagonal black and white triangles on the, it's all the Pretenders across. Oh, it's sold like hotcakes. But there's more backstory. And that is that Chrissy Hynde, this isn't something she's just become. you know, sending little mash notes on Twitter to Nitwit Nero. Because, as I said, if you were listening and remember the conversations, I know, for instance, Brother Deacon Asa does. Somewhere back in the Horn Archives is the story that he told about the time that he just about slugged her. I think it was Bill's sister who was dying of cancer. And if I recall the story correctly, it had something to do with Chrissy Hynde saying to him that it was all in her head. And I remember Bill saying he had to restrain himself to keep from slobber knocking her. So this is not new for her. But damn. That's why I allowed you to use, you know, Jesus Christ. Because, it, you know, she may have made more off of that song than any other. By the way, as to the audio of Trump blathering away in India, Stephen New York says, I bet the actual audio in Nuremberg had less echo. Probably so. The Germans can be fanatical when it comes to audio quality. It was a Telefunken U-47. And so we've come to very nearly the end of the first hour of the program, and we managed to get down to $320 to go for the evening, $980 to finish the week. And thank you very kindly to Anatole for getting us started. Anatole needs some company. I hate talking about this stuff, but, you know, that's how it goes. Because, you know, again, no ads. No corporate sponsors, no, and we can add no Bloomberg money to that now. Oh, this was hilarious. The Bloomberg campaign tweeted out a photograph of one of their campaign offices, where now bear in mind, nobody went and put a brick through the window or anything. Somebody just put a homemade sign over one of their signs outside. They just taped it on. They didn't even use a staple gun. Just tape. Just. And it, you know, it was a Bloomberg 2020 sign. And somebody taped a sign over it that said, "Eat the rich." And the Bloomberg campaign got terribly, terribly, terribly butthurt. And they put the picture up on Twitter and said, "We can do better." Because the goddess of irony is always on the job. That "Eat the Rich" sign appeared outside the Bloomberg headquarters in, wait for it, Flint, Michigan. Carol Baker mentioned this over on Facebook. The cost of fixing Flint, Michigan's water problems is about $50-ish million. Michael Bloomberg is spending on his ad campaign so far $500 million. So for one-tenth of what Michael Bloomberg has spent thus far, Flint could have clean water. Reminder, Flint still doesn't have clean water. Another reminder, Michael Bloomberg backed in his campaign a Republican in Michigan by the name of Rick Snyder. Michael Bloomberg backed him, Michael Bloomberg supported him, and Republican Rick Snyder won the race for governor of Michigan, proceeded to impose almost martial law-like economic austerity programs on various Michigan cities, and is and was directly related to the poisoning of Flint. That's Michael Bloomberg, who, by the way, has never been a Democrat. Yep. Another sign that they posted an aggrieved tweet over was of a piece of plywood spray painted in day-glow green with the word oligarch. And they were terribly, terribly upset by this. I wonder what those broadcasters who have been offered and accepted the $250,000 for 10 months of brown nosing, I wonder what they're going to do with it. Don't know. Well, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to do that to you, Flavio, but Chrissy Hynde, what a waste of earthly space. I did not know that about her. I'm crushed. Sorry, Flavio. Milkshake duck and all of that. But it's Moran Monday. And how much more Moran can you get than that? Oh, and here at the top of the hour, I need to ask answer a food porn question. Barbara wrote in. Thank you, Barbara, by the way, for your support of the program. I hope you're listening. Would you please send me instructions on how you bake corned beef and cabbage? I searched for recipes online, and none of them sound like what I think you said. I hope I'm not asking too much of you. Not at all. Well, the trick is always low and slow. And so about a 200-degree oven, and if you can either get your prepared corned beef in the little vacuum-sealed thingy, or you can do it yourself. Do it yourself is a much longer process. But you get your roasting pan, and you want to leave plenty of room for the cabbage later. You put your corned beefs in there. You sprinkle on the little seasoning packets. I use a little extra. I like it to have a lot of that flavor, so I'll throw in an extra little handful of pickling spice. That's all it is, mixed pickling spice. Mustard seeds, crushed up bay leaf, allspice, that kind of thing. And put some water in it so that it won't dry out. You don't have to submerge it or anything, but you know, enough that the water won't all boil away and it'll be nice and steamy. And then either put a lid on the roaster or put a really tight seal of aluminum foil over it. And put it in the oven for a couple of hours at about 200, 225 degrees. It'll be hot enough to kill any pathogens. It's brine soaked anyway, so rare, medium rare doesn't really matter. You want it cooked all the way through because it's brisket. And a couple hours later, take it out, check it, see how it's coming along. Because what you want to do is, you know, you don't want the cabbage in there for more than, a half hour or so. Because it tends to dissolve. But once the corned beef has gotten where you want it, cut up your cabbage and just scatter it over the whole thing, put the lid back on or the foil back around, and put it back in the other oven for about a half an hour, and it should be perfect. And damn, now I'm hungry for corned beef and cabbage. But if you don't hear this, wait, if you don't hear this, let me know. That's not going to work. That's like the old thing about, if I get there first, I'll make a mark. If you get there first, you rub it out. No. Well, I'll jot it down anyway, because if you were asking, somebody else wanted to know too, and that's almost a guarantee. But it was, another thing, when he entered the stadium in India, Nitwit Nero entered to music by Elton John. I think when the program's over this evening, yeah, I'm going to go online and find a copy of the Vestas. Not the Vespas. Wait, is that because he's a pervert? And somewhere along the way, he heard about the Vestal Virgins. And here's a little thing for paranoia, just for the fun of tickling our collective paranoia. Last night, Agnes and I were clicking along, and we've taken of late to stopping on TCM, Turner Classic Movies. Or maybe it was AMC. I think it was TCM. Yeah, because it was 31 Days of Oscar, and that's going to go until, Monday next. And curiously, you may recall that earlier this week, Gorky Pig... You may recall that he bemoaned Parasite winning Best Picture, because, of course, there's no way that a bunch of those Chinamen could ever make a Best Picture, because Merca and you know, the Academy giving Best Picture to one of them foreigner films. Well, that's not keeping America great.
It's definitely not great.
And he said, why can't we have great, why can't they make great movies anymore like Gone with the Wind? It may, and somebody could probably check and see, I don't know if you can use the internet's way back, whatever. Maybe Gone with the Wind was going to be in 31 Days of Oscar all along, because as they pointed out in the pre-roll, it remains to this day the single most profitable film ever made. Ever. And it won a shit ton of Oscars. Among other things, both Olivia de Havilland, who is still alive, probably the last remaining living cast member from that movie. Olivia de Havilland, she was nominated. Remember, she played Melanie Wilkes. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and so was Hattie McDaniel, who played Mammy. And Olivia de Havilland won. And, oh, God. Best Actress, I think, went to Vivian Leigh. It was Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Adapted, whatever. Well, I'm kind of getting to that. Scott in San Diego says, Gone with the effing wind? I would have thought Trump was more of a Birth of a Nation kind of guy. Yeah, but there's subtitles with Birth of a Nation, and that involves reading, and it makes him nervous, and then he has to snort Adderall, and then everything goes to hell. But I said, well, hell, honey, let's watch it. It had been a long time since I watched Gone with the Wind. And it rolled. And long before Star Wars had the scrolling backstory, Gone with the Wind did it. Of ladies and cavalier knights and, oh, Jesus, and the old South that is now gone with the wind. Then I looked at Agnes. I said, you know, I bet I know why he mentioned that. I bet he remembers going to the movie house with his nasty old Klansman daddy and his illegal immigrant mama to watch that movie. And I'm sure no small number of theses and PhD dissertations in, you know, film appreciation or whatever have been written about that film. But Jesus, it doesn't age well. Okay, so maybe it was I thought it was on Turner Classic Movies. Ralph's serving as the ad hoc horn research department this evening. No 31 days on 31 days of Oscar, no Gone with the Wind. So apparently it was American Movie Classics, which is kind of weird because Ted Turner specifically bought Gone with the Wind. Maybe it was, I don't know, whatever. But thank you, Ralphs. Jesus, Bob, says Brother Deacon Asa. May I remind you that Chinaman is not the preferred nomenclature Asian American, please. Yeah, I know. I kind of really know. See, the funny in that was the fact that it's a South Korean picture. But I'm sorry, it's just me channeling the maggots, can't help it. It's kind of like Gene Dixon and that guy who guesses messages from the grave by the first letter of somebody's last name. Oh, he was popular for a minute. But no, I imagine no, but you give Gone with the Wind a couple of hundred more years, and for anybody who actually knows history, there we are back in history again. Funny how Chris Matthews, reaching for a historical comparison, compares Bernie Sanders' campaign, potentially the first Jewish president of the United States ever, to the Nazi sweep across France. And yet the President of the United States makes a favorable reference to Gone with the Wind. And most of America just goes, oh, okay. Oh, yes. Wow, how did I miss that? I must be a little slow because it's Monday. Steve in New York with the assist. Asian American, please. You realize that comment was from the Big Lebowski, right? Now that you've reminded me, I do. Absolutely. But it was a horror. Just to sit and watch it. Ralph's pointing out to me a comment from the 31 Days of Oscar discussion. I didn't see Gone with the Wind on the schedule. It's its 80th anniversary. Maybe Turner has something special to honor the movie separately. Well, it was on last night. No two ways about it, and I'm pretty sure I didn't hallucinate it because we watched it all the way through. Agnes fell asleep, and then they segued into another Clark Gable movie, Oh Dear God, from up in the 50s, Mogambo. Help me, Jesus. That was some kind of terrible. Ava Gardner and Grace Kelly. And scary animals and rifles and a lot of khaki clothing in Africa. Well, I mean, not for Grace Kelly and Ava Gardner. They were both dressed like they had just stepped out of Saks Fifth Avenue, if, you know, Fifth Avenue was in East Africa. Whoop! But we watched Gone with the Wind all the way through. And as you watch it, you realize something. The only decent people in that entire film are the African-American characters. Hattie McDaniel's Mammy, in particular, truly is the moral conscience of the entire vehicle. She's she has more conscience and more ethics than than most of the characters put together. You know, the beloved Ashley is supposed to be this upright man, but when it comes right down to it, he commits treason against his country, goes to war, and proves himself useless when he comes home and doesn't have 12 oaks to fall back on. Seeing as how the Yankees had burned it down. I have no confidence whatsoever that David O. Selznick or anybody else associated with the film had any real appreciation of the horrors of the antebellum South. And I have no doubt that tons have been written about Vivian Leigh's portrayal of Scarlett. But damn, that woman is a stone-cold psychopath. I mean, she's not just grasping or greedy or... Uh-uh. She has no ability to empathize with anybody else and is concerned only with herself. I mean, you could haul out your copy of the DSM-5 or whatever and just check off psychopath axes watching Gone with the Wind. Of the white characters, the one with something nearest any morals or conscience is, of course, that rapscallion Rhett Butler. And then the scenes where Belle Watling, you know, the whore, actually she's more of a madam. She runs a bawdy house in Atlanta. Everybody else has those sugar-coated, sticky, gooey Southern accents, with the exception of Clark Gable, particularly the female characters. You know, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But Belle Watling, as I pointed out to Agnes, I said, she's not talking like them. I said, listen, what is that accent? She said, I don't know. I said, that's a Southern Appalachian accent. That is a hillbilly accent. It's true. They had to delineate that Belle Watling was not as she was not of the same class as the gentry and the genteel ladies of the Old South. So they gave her a hillbilly accent. And, of course, when Butterfly McQueen uttered her famous line, all I heard was, "But Marse Donald, I don't know nothing about Cajun no babies." Okay, thank you. Herman says, yeah, it did run last night on TCM. So that was TCM I was watching. And it wasn't scheduled on their 31 days of Oscar. So guess what that means? They ran it to placate the maggots. They ran it to placate the tender fifis of the madman in the White House. Yeah, thank you, Scott. It was TCM. Robert in Australia says, Gone with the Wind. I actually saw Gone with the Wind in a cinema during one of those anniversary revival screenings. It must have been in the 70s. I remember two things about it. Everyone laughed at the end of part one, the I will never go hungry again speech. Everyone quoted Clark Gable's last line and then laughed at Vivian Leigh's last line. It was a four-hour soap opera with a war in it. P.S. I saw Parasite last night. It's an excellent film, well worth seeing. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Thank you, Robert. But one of the things that occurred to me is that two of the greatest cinematic achievements of early Hollywood are D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation and Gone with the Wind. Birth of a Nation was such a sensation that Woodrow Wilson, the President of the United States at the time, had it screened at the White House, which took some doing back in, 1919? Birth of a Nation, of course, was based on a novel that sold oodles of copies called The Klansman. Who knows? A young Fred Trump may have seen it and thought, by God, there's an organization I want to be part of. That is not impossible. And Woodrow Wilson loved Birth of a Nation. Here's a hint. The Klansman, referenced in the book title, is the hero of the piece. It, just as in Gone with the Wind, there's the scene where the nasty carpetbaggers come down south to try to take terror away from poor Miss Scarlet. And then, of course, the noble Ashley is later on covered up for by a tall tale told by Rhett Butler after he, Ashley, has been shot in a Klan as he participated in a Klan raid against the carpetbaggers. And Scarlett's new husband gets a bullet in his head during the same Klan raid. But those two those two examples of the absolute pinnacle of the filmmaker's art. What does it say about Hollywood? What does it say about the nation at the time? But when it came to pouring everything into a film, the two films most acknowledged as the absolute zenith of filmmaking for their time are films in support of and broadly approving of white supremacy. And we wonder why we still have problems. But there are little historical notes through there that I found fascinating. There's a reference to, among some of the old Confederate ladies after the war, raising money for the Memorial Fund. And therein was born the Lost Cause. And in particular, in those memorial funds, was born the proliferation of these disgusting monuments to these miserable traitors that dot the South. Fully 10, 15, 20, 30 years after it was all over, and they start, and when the Supreme Court rules in Plessy versus Ferguson that separate but equal is okay, and flings the barn doors wide for Jim Crow, those statues start popping up all over as a reminder of and an enforcement of the terror campaign, the post-war terror campaign, that resulted in Jim Crow and the elimination of the Freedmen's Bureau, of African-American voting, all of it. And it's all right there. And curiously, in 2020, with a president in the White House who did not win the popular vote, but did win the Electoral College, all the efforts at reconstructing the South came to a close with a brokered deal whereby, was it Rutherford B. Hayes, became president of the United States on an agreement and his promise to end Reconstruction, and the Congress of the United States at roughly the same time enacts the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids the use of federal troops to enforce the laws of the nation. You know, if you just look at Posse Comitatus and you do so in a vacuum, you think, hey, that's probably a pretty good idea. The military should not be able to enforce the law of the country. But then you learn why. You learn why that bill came into law. And it was solely, exclusively, and strictly to prevent people who had recently been set free, given freedom, afforded civil rights, prevent them from being able to exercise those rights. That's what Posse Comitatus did, because it withdrew all of the federal troops from the occupied South, so that the South could go back to its filthy business of oppression and racism, murder and rape. How much of America knows this? How much of America could glean any of this from something as simple as watching a four-hour soap opera with a war in it, as Robert describes it? Well, I don't know, but I did. Birth of a Nation, what the fuck, says Robert in Australia. And I first saw Birth of a Nation on a community TV channel. It's long gone thanks to the Liberal Party. I switched over to the channel about halfway through the film. White actors in blackface playing evil Union soldiers attack innocent white Southern women who are then rescued by the Klan in full getup. What the fuck? It took me a while to track down the history of what I'd seen. Crikey! P.S. Trump will never see Parasite. It's in Korean with English subtitles. Again, he'd have to read. Yep, thank you, Herman. It was definitely TCM. And again, sure, my Spidey sense is tingling. but if it wasn't originally on the schedule, Nitwit Nero tweets it, and then TCM injects it into the... Wow. That really is kind of telling, isn't it? So here we are halfway through the program, and I've been filibobstering along for about 90 minutes. And Anatole's kind gift is all that's sitting there, and it needs some friends, and he needs some company. And we've got a shit ton of bills to pay to end the month of February. And maybe if you haven't kicked in a while, this would be a great time to do that. So maybe think about it. No, don't think about it. Please do it. We don't interrupt the program to sell you shit. And presidential election years are hell on the people who do this sort of work, because the politicians in our capitalized money sodden electoral system suck all the oxygen out of the room. Hey, Mike Bloomberg, look, I think we can come to a happy agreement here. I won't support you in the primary, but if you're the nominee, I'll vote for you. So how about $125,000 for that if you're giving other people, offering other people $250,000 for 10 months' work? How about $125,000 for five? Then we won't have to worry about this fundraising. Then again, that probably won't work either because... never mind. Let's run over... let's run over to the Skype line. Oh, yuck. Dowhead in the chat room says, one of my neighbors just ran a Trump 2020 flag up his outdoor flagpole, asshat. Agnes and I were out and about today, and right by, and this seemed kind of incongruous. A Subaru Forester with a pair, not one, but two, Trump 2020, keep America great stickers on it. I mean, what's a keep America great person doing in a Subaru? I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to drive a Subaru. This is an unpaid product placement. They're fine vehicles, as Tracy can attest. But they're not exactly your MAGA mobiles, as far as I can tell. No. Anyway, let's see what Todd's up to. Hey, Todd, sorry you had to wait, but I had to get all that out of the way.
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, Todd.
Mr. Charlotte? Hello? Oh, you're laughing. I'm trying to talk with Mr. Charlotte.
Is this my...
I'm sorry, this is so fucked up.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, shit, I'm sorry. That was like, yeah. I didn't think I was going to laugh that hard, but then the response, I was like, oh, shit, that was not a good idea.
Well, you know, you never know until you try them, and yeah, don't use that one at the cookout.
But it would look, but see, this is the thing. It was in the back of my mind, and when you got on to the, as you got further deeper into your monologue, I was like, oh my God, yeah, this is. I'm sorry, it's too intimate. All right. I don't know. I'm on a different level, man. I don't think somebody can call me the N-word. I would rather you call me the N-word than ask me why I had this job. I'll put it like that.
Well, they're functionally equivalent, aren't they?
No. Absolutely not.
Well, no, I mean, if you why do you have that job and that word? They convey the same idea.
Well, it does convey the same idea. Yes, it does. Yeah. You know what? Right. It's just added. It's like added on. All right. Like when you buy a car, it's like, okay, air conditioning.
Tax tag, title, and dealer prep.
Right. They see? That's why you do what you do. Oh, Lord. All right. So, you know, it's like Hunter S. Thompson talking about the rum people in Jamaica. So, listen. We see what's happening here, right?
You tell me.
Well, this is what I want to say. In four sentences, tell me what you think. If you distill down your monologue, your filibuster in a paragraph, you know, where would you bring it?
Help me here.
Hello?
Yeah, that's what I said. Help me. I'm not sure I follow.
Well, there was a lot going on. I mean, honestly, I was shocked because I was on this Hank Schiffhead, Mr. Charlie shit, and then he brought it up, and I was like, oh, my God. How are we, like, thinking about the same thing at the same time? Honestly, it really fucked me up. Yeah, that was strange. That was strange.
It
got me thinking about
it. It happens. Hmm? It happens all the time here. I mean, I'll be saying something and I'll get an email about it at the same time. Before the internet latency can even catch up.
See, and I'm not trying to get off topic, even though there is no topic right this second. But you know, if you understand what like a Faraday cage is, it seems like there's something to that. Like in terms of collective thought, we're all connected. We not, you know, maybe we cannot see it, can't touch it. You know, it's not scientific, but you know, we're all connected. And when folks try to operate like we're not connected, that's what causes discord. You know, and I firmly believe that. But I will say this. So, you know, we're in trouble here. And the DNC is looking very weak. And they started out weak, and this is exactly what was going to happen. I saw this coming. So now here we have a person in charge of all our intelligence, and we have a mentally ill fascist who's in charge, and he's constantly aggrieved, constantly, and he will be able to use the apparatus of the state. When I say the state, I mean, you know, United States of America, to inflict pain upon anyone he feels like has attacked him or made criticism against him that he doesn't agree with. And, you know, Bill Barr's right there. And this nonsense. See, the DNC started off with this bullshit. They did not understand. This is what I don't get. These people get paid a lot of money. A lot of money.
Absolutely.
Now, and I mean, my background is in like psychology, neuroscience, and sociology. And actually, I have more credit hours in sociology than anything else, almost. But it's quite clear that when you're facing an adversary that is laser focused, they got one candidate, there's no one else, there's like, that's it, you're running against Trump. So laser focus, boom. That's your, you know, we're gladiators, you know, that's it. Okay, fine. That's what we're dealing with. Yet they come to the event ill-prepared, disorganized. And we've talked about this. This guy, whoever, the whole apparatus, what is going on with them? They're not serious. They were never serious. They should have figured this shit out, like, early on. Like, you need, vet 8 people and get it down to 4. See, now...
But how do you do that absent letting people choose?
It doesn't fucking matter. No. I'm sorry. That's the system. Now, see, that's the other thing. It's the fucking system. That's why we have to carry around specific wooden clubs that are made from a specific spruce tree from the West Coast to drub people upon the head when they bring up this electoral college and how it protects the hordes in the cities against, you know, the people who live in the hinterlands. That's bullshit. It's all about slavery. This electoral college bullshit is about slavery. You know, it was trying to keep those colonies from the South in a union, trying to make, you know, build up the East Coast, a defense against England. And all right, we'll count these people as 3/5 of a person.
Well, that's why I describe the history of this country the way it is, because that's reality. They, you know, there were significant distinctions between, and it was early. There was slavery up and down the 13 original colonies. But it eventually phased away in the northern states. But plantation agriculture in the Old South was the equivalent back then of massive corporate agriculture now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, raising massive crops and monocrops. Yep. You know, the plantation might have been primarily in cotton, but you know, there'd be a little farm off to the side for the corn, for the feed grains, and you know, beans and squash, corn, beans and squash, of course, is the classic indigenous agriculture of this of the northern hemisphere. The so-called, you know, from, say, Guatemala north, because that's the way it's spread.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd have some of that off to the side, but they were planting massive monocrops, and it wasn't just cotton. Indigo was another monocrop.
Right.
Tobacco, of course, and ironically, hemp. Places that weren't mm-hmm. particularly amenable to cotton were amenable to hemp. And in the 17th and 18th and 19th century, and into the 20th, frankly, this country had an insatiable hunger for hemp, because it's a strong fiber that also has a ton of uses. And the United States military, and the United States Navy in particular, couldn't get enough. And so if you really wanted to make money, you had to work in volume, whether it be cotton, hemp, indigo, tobacco, rice, sugar cane. And and you've got to have some way to work it. And of course that that filthy planter class weren't about to do the work themselves. And the and they tried. See, most people don't know the history. The white colonists tried first to enslave the indigenous peoples.
How do they not know that? That's common. That's
well,
common
for
knowledge.
Starters, they're not taught, especially in certain parts. Especially
what
in certain parts of this country.
But taught
is part of a larger thing. The same thing happened in Mexico, and as Flavio could tell you, in Brazil. The white colonists came over and tried to enslave the indigenous people, and the indigenous people weren't having it. They would rather die on their feet than live on their knees. And the indigenous peoples that were not felled by the filthy diseases that were carried by the filthy colonists, the filthy unbathed Europeans who were just cesspools of microbes and viruses and bacteria. Well, the ones that weren't killed by the diseases were burned to death, hanged, flogged, branded, and simply worked to death. And it didn't take long for death to come in the silver mines of Mexico and the mines of Peru and Chile, Ecuador. The sugar plantations. And so what happens is, as the New York Times pointed out with its series noting the arrival of slavery in the colonies in 1619, we have to remember that the English were late to the game. 1619, when the first load of enslaved Africans arrives near Point Comfort in Virginia. Well, 1519 was the anniversary of Cortez's arrival in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, it was Nunez and
slavery.
Spanish.
Yeah, and slavery followed hot on its heels there, too. And the Portuguese, of course, who had a leg up on everybody because they'd been working the West African coast all the way around the tip of the African continent and up all the east side, and had been playing at the slavery game for a long time before even the Spanish got into it.
Exactly.
And when you get over here, what happens is basically at the Pennsylvania state line, the southern state line of Pennsylvania. That was the malaria and yellow fever line. If you were south of that and you were a white colonist, if you could live for 2 years, you were said to have been seasoned, and you were probably going to survive. But the place where I was born and raised, the yellow fever ravaged that area all the way up until the building of the dams across the Tennessee River that provided flood control.
Yeah, man, but where you are, oh my God.
But as historians explain,
that beautiful fresh air and the hollers, man, when you burn that wood, you can just see the smoke settle. When you're driving down the highway, this shit settles, man. It's fucking, that's the shit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I'm talking about, though, is the fact that because the seasoning was so hard. I mean, we take the August recess in Washington D.C. When everybody bugs out of Washington D.C. every August, has its roots in yellow fever. The yellow fever epidemics that burned through, you know, your hometown, Philly.
Well, that's why Germantown was like big, because it was it's amazing.
It's
how
up
much
and
higher
it's,
it is.
It's up and it's up and it's out.
And you've got fresh creeks. That's where people went, you know.
But here's the trick. part of the economic reason for kidnapping or buying from others, what have you, African slaves, because the market was on the ground in Africa. One tribe would sell another tribe. Muslim Arab traders would, you know, it was the economy of the time, was because they were immune to malaria. Not completely immune, but not as prone to be tormented by malaria as were white Europeans. And then it proliferates from there with these interesting little bumps in the road, like the fact that if you scratch your head and say, gee, wait a minute, we actually passed a law in the United States, and the southern states went along with it. We passed a law in Congress that said no more importation of African slaves.
Well, you fast-forwarding a whole lot.
Well, I am. But it's important. Yeah. It's important because in that moment, the reason the South went along with it is and as disgusting as it is to discuss, the breeding and selling of human beings had become a domestic industry. It's kind of...
That's exactly right. They wanted to, in other words,
I mean,
they wanted
you're old enough. You're old enough. Do you remember when all the pot came from Colombia and Mexico and Jamaica?
Yep.
Well, then we started growing our own here.
And we got the best, just like we had the best beer, we got the best herb.
Yeah.
Same old thing. But right. So, you know, that legacy is real. And this is the problem, right? People need to come, apparently, I don't know. Do people not know this? This is like, to me, common knowledge. I don't know. It's just, you know, are people not aware of this? Is that what you're saying?
They're not taught. And most of them, if someone makes the attempt to teach them, they don't want to know. And for instance, I think it's Florida has a new bill in the legislature out now where parents can tell the school system things that they object to their children learning. And we're not just talking about evolution or how not to make babies.
Yeah, that's not a good. Wow.
You know, as Steve from New York points out, you know, the slave trade was foundational to everything that this country is. What he means by that is that, for instance, the great insurance giants of the world, like Lloyd's of London,
mm-hmm.
got their start gambling on ships being able to go out, pick up their cargo, and bring it back to merry old England. Well, eventually, the insurance industry begins insuring slave ships.
Tell it. And a lot of those companies are still around, like Aetna.
Sure, they are.
Well,
I mean, they didn't take apart Georgetown University brick by brick, and that place was founded on it. And slavery runs deep into the origins of the $50 billion endowment of Harvard University. I mean, people say, oh, reparations, how would we ever pay for them? Well, you know, it's not like the money isn't around. And the people responsible for it.
Right. And there's that
scene in Gone with the Wind where I think Scarlett walks past and there's a white carpetbagger standing. We're going to give you 40 acres and a mule. 40 acres and a mule. And then you're going to get to vote, and you're going to vote like all your friends vote. And it is so transparently supportive of racism and white supremacy. Remember, Gone with the Wind is happening, what, 1936? A scant 15 years before, 20,000 or more, maybe 100,000 Klansmen had proudly marched down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
But no, we don't teach this. I mean, I grew up and went to schools where I had a couple of teachers who still referred to that little dust-up between 1861 and 1865 as the War of Northern Aggression.
See, that nomenclature is unacceptable.
And you know, that was a bit of an outlier. The preference was war between the states. It wasn't the war between a nation and renegade states. It was, it was Iowa versus Mississippi, Louisiana versus Vermont, Maine versus Alabama.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. So if when you ask certain people and you say, well, you know, we talk about the Civil War, it's like, well, and if you say, well, you know, the people who were engaged in treason, they lost. Some people get very upset.
Oh, they do. I mean, I get the emails,
But wait. Okay, but wait a minute. Let's stop right there. Is this true? This is what I'm saying. I would have to parse out emotion from fact. Now, of course, I'm biased. However, okay, you were treasonous if you're seceding from the Union that you agreed to be a part of.
Treason is the only crime defined in the Constitution of the United States, and it is defined as, among other things, waging war against the United States of America.
That's pretty fucking simple.
And, you know, lobbing, you know.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yeah, waging war against the United States of America. And that's exactly what happened when Pierre-Gustave Tuton-Beauregard and his gang of little shitbirds started lobbing shells into Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor.
They fired off first.
That the federal government built to protect the slavers of Charleston.
To protect their fucking peculiar institution. Because some black people had slaves too. This shit was all fucked up. It's just, you know, come on. I don't even know how it's just every day, man.
Well, see, you need to know something. We have little right wing lurkers on this program. But I instituted a rule a long time ago that there would be no right wing turds on this program because way back when we first started this program, I learned a statistic from a guest I had on. Who mentioned that back then, it probably hasn't changed much, really. There were 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal or progressive programming.
I believe that.
And there are people who said, well, you know, but Bob, it'd be fun if you'd argue with these assholes and just beat the shit out of them and make them look horrible. And my response to that was, well, then that just turns this into radio wrestling. I want to create a community where we can talk in goodwill and discuss in goodwill and good faith both our troubled history and our troubled past and solutions for a better future. You can never do that if a Republican or a white winger or a maggot or a birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bircher, bagger, booger eater, old South devotee, or any of those other purveyors of hog slop are involved. So we've got, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, we've got trolls that listen to this program, and every time and don't let this affect you or slow you down. I mean, it's just a fact. Every time you call or every time Tracy calls, I will get emails that use the most vulgar of terms.
Are you kidding me?
Whether it's see you next Tuesday or that word with all the same letters as ginger, I get them. And I specifically and particularly get them if we go in to the unrepented, unrequited sins of white supremacy that motivated most of the history of this country and motivate it to this day.
So the truth makes them uncomfortable.
Facts. Yeah, being confronted with what they're a part of. Now, see, on the other hand, I can deal with it. My grandfather was a member of the 20th century version of the Klan. You know, the same folks that were marching in D.C. I don't know that he had the money for the trip, but I got the picture of his Klan rally.
1926, 1925, whatever.
I think the photo I have is 1924, and it took place in Oak Hill.
Okay.
Oak Hill, West Virginia.
But that's when the Klan was at its peak.
But, you know, I can deal with that. I have ancestors on both sides of the conflict, but I don't have ancestors who were running massive plantations or anything. That's the one thing about West Virginia. It was not conducive and never has been conducive because of its topography to that kind of massive agriculture, be it tobacco or rice or indigo or cane or cotton or hemp. You've got to have massive amounts of relatively flat land to pull that shit off.
Mm-hmm.
But the people on, for instance, and it's just history, you know, in Gone with the Wind, there's that scene, and, you know, this is so way before CGI. There's that scene where Scarlett walks out into the railroad yard, and you hear the moaning and the groaning around her, and the camera comes up on the crane, dollies along, and from its tighter focus widens out until you see thousands of people laying on the dusty ground in costume. Must have cost a goddamn fortune. I mean, that's why it was, I mean, like I said, Hollywood poured everything it had into what was then a technical marvel that celebrated white supremacy. And those and what we forget about, you know, the Confederate Army, for instance, is that it was not all made up of those cavalier knights on horseback that the scroll at the beginning of the movie talks about. It was made up of illiterate, goddamn dumb dirt farmers. Okay? And you know, wool hat backwoods people who, you know, signed their name by marking an X. And there was no way, and because all them planters, well, they weren't going to be no grunts. And so they were the officer class. And left the really filthy dying to be done by people who had no connection with their way of life. And that's where the propaganda comes in. And you can see these documents. They are recruiting posters for the Confederate Army that include references to how the godless heathen Yankees are coming down here and are fucking our women's, violating Southern nobility. And that was enough. They preached it in the churches. And they leapt out of the pews, and they ran to defend Southern womanhood, even though a whole bunch of the Southern womanhood they were defending didn't look like no Miss Melanie and no Miss Scarlet. They were old before their time, often dead by 45, unlettered, untoothed, and uncouth. But that's the kind of shit that always works.
Well, I have nothing. I have no rebuttal to that because you just telling the truth. And you see, the truth hurts. All right.
Well, so, you can't. We cannot ever hope to be a better country unless we deal with what this country is and has been. Honestly. And so, the ancestors of mine who were on the wrong side of that were the ones who were convinced that the Yankees were going to come down and fuck the women.
That wasn't happening anyway. But whatever. People fuck. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. We're human beings. Come on. Now, wow, you just kind of let loose, man. I mean, I said Mr. Charlie, and everything opened up. But
that thing last night messed with my head in a big way.
Why is that?
Well, I hadn't watched it in forever. I knew what I was in for, but I was watching it with a critical eye as opposed to an eye toward being entertained.
Mm.
And that makes a shit ton of difference. We've entered the third hour of the program, and I need to thank Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in. That takes us down to 9:55 to go to finish the week. And I'm not sure what it would be, but we're just counting it toward the week. But, yeah, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully you and Anatole will get a little more company before the program is out this evening. Thank you. But if you watch something like that with a critical eye, it is a much different experience than watching it just to have your brain softened for a little while. And there's nothing noble. There is utterly nothing noble about any of the Southerners in that film. There is no nobility whatsoever. There's very precious little of even common decency. And one of the things that I thought of in particular as I watched it, I thought of, and you can find it at Letters of Note. I remember years ago when Dr. John turned me onto this. It was published in the aftermath of the Civil War. A man named Colonel Anderson of Wilson County, Tennessee, trying to say, having previously committed treason and having been pardoned, was then trying to save his farm, which became a farm as soon as it was no longer a plantation. Wilson County, Tennessee, is just to the east of where Nashville is. County seat's Mount.
Is that is that like on the line where you're having that trouble back in the day?
Its county seat is Mount Juliet. Oddly enough, it's the county where Charlie Daniels now resides, and from which he spews out his right wing filth.
So is that deep in the Blue Ridge?
No. It's on the sort of Tennessee Plateau area, to the east of Nashville, Central Tennessee.
Ah.
But okay. he wrote to one of he wrote to one of his former slaves who had taken up residence in the greater Cincinnati area, asking him to come back and help him save the farm. And the man's response was published in a local paper there in southern Ohio.
What?
Oh, yeah. And it caused quite a sensation.
Holy cow.
Dayton, I'm sorry, not
That's
Cincinnati.
That's a little weird.
Dayton, Ohio. Dayton, Ohio, August 7th, 1865. The war was freshly over then. And people like, it begins, to my old master, Colonel P.H. Anderson, Big Spring, Tennessee. And it's from a man by the name of Jordan Anderson. He and his wife were freed on the plantation. His wife Amanda, Union troops freed them, right. And they went north. And they went to Ohio. Damn right. They went to Ohio as quick as they could get.
And that's what I was about to say. Shoot.
And so it was in a little over a year afterward when Colonel Patrick Henry Anderson, the man who had held him in bondage and stolen his labor all his life, had the nerve to ask him to come on back. This is not a joke. And he says, sir, I got your letter and was glad to find that you had not forgotten Jordan and that you wanted me to come back and live with you again, promising to do better for me than anybody else can. I've often felt uneasy about you. Thought the Yankees would have hung you long before this for harboring Rebs they found at your house. Suppose they never heard about your going to Colonel Martin's to kill the Union soldier that was left by his company in their stable. Although you shot at me twice before I left you, I did not want to hear of your being hurt, and I'm glad you're still living. It would do me good to go back to the dear old home again and see Miss Mary and Miss Martha and Alan, Esther, Green, and Lee. Give my love to them all and tell them I hope we will meet again in a better world, if not in this. I would have gone back to see you all when I was working in the Nashville hospital, but one of the neighbors told me that Henry intended to shoot me if he ever got a chance. That was his son, Henry. The treasonous plantation owner. He says, I'm doing tolerably well here. I get $25 a month with victuals and clothing, have a comfortable home for Mandy, his wife. The folks call her Mrs. Anderson, and the children, Millie, Jane, and Grundy, go to school and are learning well. The teacher says Grundy has a head. The teacher says Grundy has a head for a preacher. Now, this is all just so genial and so friendly. But then he says, as to my freedom, which you say I can have, there is nothing to be gained on that score, as I got my free papers in 1864 from the Provost Marshal General of the Department of Nashville. Mandy says she would be afraid to go back without some proof that you were disposed to treat us justly and kindly, and we've concluded to test your sincerity by asking you send us our wages for the time we served you. This will make us forget and forgive old scores and rely on your justice and friendship in the future. I served you faithfully for 32 years and Mandy 20 years at $25 a month for me and $2 a week for Mandy. Wage disparity. Our earnings would amount to $11,680. Add to this the interest for the time our wages have been kept back, and Deduct that you paid for our clothing and three doctor's visits to me and pulling a tooth from Mandy, and the balance will show what we are in justice entitled to. Please send the money by Adams Express in care of V. Winters, Esquire, Dayton, Ohio. In answering this letter, please state if there would be any safety for my Millie and Jane, who are now grown up and both good-looking girls. You know how it was with poor Matilda and Catherine. I'd rather stay here and starve and die if it comes to that than have my girls brought to shame by the violence and wickedness of their young masters.
Wow.
You will also please state if there's been any schools open for the colored children in your neighborhood. The great desire of my life now is to give my children an education and have them form virtuous habits. Say howdy to George Carter and thank him for taking the pistol from you when you were shooting at me. Now, that's not made up. That's real. That is real history.
Damn! It's very powerful.
And what is particularly fascinating is that Jordan Anderson, the man who writes the letter, he lives to be, I think, 92. Patrick.
That's like 150 now.
Patrick Henry Anderson, his old master, would be dead within 2 years of the writing of his letter at the age of 44, having been financially ruined, and having been forced to sell his farm for a pittance. And for all I know, it sits there in Wilson County, Tennessee, and maybe it's got one of them big old Country Stars mansions built on it, because you can find them out there by the lake. Or maybe it's got a Walmart or a Cracker Barrel on it.
I would prefer you not bring up Cracker Barrel in our conversation.
Well, that was kind of on purpose.
No. Because, no, I can't do anything with that. No.
As Steve in New York has pointed out, our community, we disagree sometimes vehemently, but we are all knowledgeable in our views and willing to listen and learn when we don't know. And frankly, you know, I've spared this community all of it, but I have spared this community having to form a new opinion of an individual that you know by name and have heard numerous times on this program. And it is, it's disgusting.
Damn.
It's disgusting. It's sickening.
Man, you, wait a minute. You hit me, man. You just hit me in the head, man. You didn't prep me for that.
So, okay. Yeah.
But you know what? I think I know where, yeah. And, you know, yeah.
It is Moran Monday, so.
Yeah. Anyway, so. Wow. All that Mr. Charlie stuff, that, you know, that was interesting. There's a couple of things, though. There's this one thing, you know, we didn't talk about any politics yet. And, you know, I'm just don't understand that the DNC, they're not serious. Just not.
I hesitate to go into the whole goddamn DNC blah 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 thing, because the primary process is still underway. The DNC doesn't have a vote.
All right. I hate to do this. Let me cut you off because I know because my time is limited, because you're going to cut me off. And so let me say this. The reason I brought it up like that is because it's clear, and I love it. I'm feeling the burn. And that's really, I mean, I was feeling the burn. I'm like, Bernie, see, this is the thing. Bernie has shown that he can do this. See, that's the thing. That's what people need to see. Can he win? Yeah, he can win.
I'm not. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I'm not just as candid as I know how to be. I'm not worried about him winning. I think he can win. Any candidate can win if people unify around that candidate. Winning is not the issue here. Surviving is.
I'm feeling the burn. All right.
What? But what? I'm asking this. This is not me gooning on. This is not me gooning on Bernie. It's not. Mm-hmm. But I am concerned, and that's even the wrong word. You know how nasty this process has been, right? You know how nasty it was in 16, and you know how nasty it. It started out kind of mild, but no, we've gotten to nasty because we always knew we would get to nasty. And it is nasty.
That was predicted.
But here's the thing. Bernie can win. And I'm all in. For
wait. Operationally defined win. I'm not saying he's going to be Trump. I'm saying he's going to be.
Well, no, I think he can beat Trump. There are a hell of a lot more. There are a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. And if people coalesce behind him, he can win. That is not the problem.
I'm feeling good about it. Man, I was so excited.
Todd, the problem is him surviving.
He looks good, man. I think he looks better after the heart attack.
A man in his demographic after his first myocardial infarction, half of people who have their first heart attack at his age are dead inside of 5 years. Half of them, Todd.
I know this. Wait.
Just let me flesh this all the way out. So, okay, right. he's not going to drop dead in office. But in 2024, there is no way that you can tell me that an 84-year-old man can run a presidential campaign for a second term.
There's a bagel in there. Listen, let me tell you something. He's going to get the right people in the right spot to right this ship. You understand what I'm saying? Look, you got to get the right people in the right spot quickly. Because the people that we don't agree with, they are packing the
Okay, get the right people in the right spot quickly. If the Senate remains in Republican hands, you can bet your ass you will not have a secretary of any goddamn thing, if ever. Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Commerce. No. And if Mitch McConnell remains the Senate Majority Leader, you can bet your ass there will not be. Well, I simply cannot allow our socialist president to nominate some socialist justice of the Supreme Court over my dead body. Now, does that sound like fiction? Because it's not. It's just the future come to talk to us for a little bit.
See, you know, Mitch McConnell is an evil genius, and he is behind that. between Mitch McConnell and the people that surround him, that hover around him like contaminated insects, he's just an evil, evil, nasty man. Just a nasty, nasty man. There are bills on his desk. That's why when people say, all right, oh my God, wait a minute, I'm sorry. Thank you so much. This clicked. All right, we have to talk about this. This is serious shit. This is serious doodle right here. Now, we do not have a Frank Luntz. We don't have any Luntzian people. I don't know. We're asleep. All right. So collectively, we have to be our own Luntzians. We have to really come with quick, intelligent things to say. Now, you see, when they talk, you know, anything, think about it. Throw one out.
Go.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, all right. Whatever. Look, it's like, all right.
All I'm telling you is that everything we went through in 16 and everything we're going through this year, we're going to go through again in 2024, even if one of the, and it's not just Bernie, even if one of these octogenarians wins. Because this is not the dictatorship of the gerontariat that the Soviet Union became. And we can't afford to be. But I'm game for it. I've said all along, I will support whoever the Democratic nominee is. Some more.
Well, of course we have to.
Some more enthusiastically than others. I've got a piece of audio here you might find interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry about my brain freeze.
I mean, it's too long. But you remember back in 2016 when Hillary doggedly refused to release the tapes of her telling the people at Goldman Sachs that they shit ice cream and are the best people on earth?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yes.
She refused to control her narrative. Well, she wasn't the only one giving speeches to Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
So, too, was Michael Bloomberg, in 2016 he told Goldman Sachs at Yankee Stadium, a meeting there, because Goldman Sachs can do that, you know, rent out Yankee Stadium.
Right.
He said, the left is arising. The progressive movement is just as scary. Elizabeth Warren on one side, and whoever you want to pick on the Republicans on the right side. Well, to start, my first campaign platform would be to defend the banks, and you know how well that's going to sell in this country. But seriously, somebody's got to stand up and do what we need: a healthy banking system that's going to take risks, because that's what creates the jobs for everybody. And nobody's willing to say that. The trouble is, these campaigns in this day and age really are about slogans and not about issues anymore. And in this election, you're going to see people are voting, and they're either love or hate, mostly hate both, but who do you hate the least? That's what they're going to vote for, and they're not going to vote on issues. And then, looking at the Goldman Sachs crowd, he said, you're my peeps.
Damn, man.
You're my peeps. And went on, it's 49 minutes long. He said he would use drone strikes on his enemies if he was elected in 2020.
He was not good.
He was joking, of course. Joking.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right.
So, now, you get the idea.
Right. All right.
Some more enthusiastically than others. But none of these octogenarians can realistically be expected to serve a second term. And just because you've got an incumbent vice president who picks up the mantle afterward, you know, at the end of the first term and runs as an incumbent vice president to extend the glorious presidency of Phil in the 80-year-old's name. It doesn't mean others aren't going to come out of the woodwork to run again.
I'm just curious why.
So imagine Bloomberg and with Mayor Pete, or imagine Joe Biden with Amy Klobuchar, or Bernie. Bernie would choose. Please, Jesus, don't let it be Tulsi.
Okay, so back to Bernie. And I know that people want to talk to you, but seriously, back to Bernie. Now, the one thing about Bernie is that maybe, you know, this is the last time we'll be able to vote, like, in our conscience. Like, you know, obviously Trump is going to win again. I mean, I think
there's a distinct likelihood of that. And if it happens, it will be on us, not on whoever the nominee is. I mean, Jesus. We outvoted Nitwit Nero by 3 million votes in 2016.
I understand that. Let's parse this out. Let's parse this out. The only way that us people, we're going to make this work, we have to vote with overwhelming numbers, like water going over a waterfall. Like, just come on. We have to vote early and often. And that's the only way, because the Republican senators refuse. Everything is set up to fund money to protect our elections, and they continue to block it. Why do you block protection for our elections? Why? Why? That's a, you know, who benefits from that? I'm asking a question, Bob.
Answer it.
It's semi-rhetorical.
Then I don't have to answer if it's rhetorical.
Semi-rhetorical. All right, fine. I'll answer it. Then that means that they're protecting something. They're protecting the status quo. Everything's going the way it's supposed to go. And that's it. And you know what? I feel good about myself in a way. I'm gonna say this. Because now I see this blurb out there when a reporter in Helsinki asked Putin, like, okay, who did you like? He said, oh, Trump. Did you want him to win? Yes. And I brought that up. Nobody was talking about it. No one. And, you know, I don't know, man. You know, maybe we get what we deserve. Maybe in a way, because there are a lot of distractions out here, you know. Like me, I'm taking time out of my day, you know, but I think this is important, because sometimes I think I have some good information to offer. You know what I mean? I can be doing other things. I'm serious.
No, I'm not being critical. Not in the least. But what I'm trying to do is lay out the breadth of what's at stake here, because it seems,
wow, man, your voice, you sound okay, please, man, preach.
Because it seems more than likely to me that we are going to have an octogenarian president. We're going to have an octogenarian nominee, let's put it that way. And that means that immediately gives the jackass in the White House the upper hand as the younger candidate. No shit. I mean, it's just numbers. And because we're going to have an octogenarian in the White House, it is impossible to think that we're going to have a two-term octogenarian in the White House. Remember when we talked about that? Remember when we talked about the little clause that's tucked away there in Section 4 of the 25th Amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Or such other body as Congress may by law provide?
Yep. The committee.
We're going to need that other body. Because decline at that age comes quick and hard. I don't care how vigorous they look right now.
Bob. Wait a minute. Everybody stop. Put a little red mark on the timestamp on your thing. Look, what you just said is very important. Because this doesn't even relate to it, whatever happens. That's important. Damn.
I think
it
is.
Brilliant. No, that's a big fucking that's Big Lebowski, man. That's a big deal.
And that's Bernie?
Damn, man.
That's Bernie and that's Bloomberg and it's Biden. It's all three of them.
Man, you hit on something. That's serious doo-doo, man.
I mean,
that's the real.
And mm-hmm. but see, we're very good at some things in this country, like trying to cover for that sort of thing. How many people have been observing Donald Trump since January 20th, 2017, and marking his continued decline?
It's finally sinking in. I mean, the professionals already knew it, but it's finally sinking. But listen, the committee, right. But this is important, man, what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. You and we talked. I remember exactly where I was sitting when we talked about this. At listening to you. Right. That is. I'm not trying to sound scattered, but yeah, man, you're on to something. This is the time to seize upon that. We're in some dangerous times. This dude, I'm sorry, man. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Flavio chimed in and said, Sanders needs Warren's delegates. So Warren runs until the end and then negotiates a position in a Sanders administration in return for some of her delegates. I don't know why Elizabeth Warren would want a position in the Sanders administration. I don't know why you would give up being the senior senator or a senator, I think she may be the junior senator, from Massachusetts to have a temporary job in a presidential administration. I don't see that happening. And with all the talk of socialism out there, her statement that she is an avowed capitalist will make Bernie's most diehard supporters have a baby.
Oh. I hate to tell you. Oh, my God. Now, I hate to tell you. Oh, my God. Listen. You know, we, like I said, we want to vote. We're going to vote. But the Bernie thing, socialism, we don't have enough time to educate folks.
Well,
they don't know what socialism.
No, they just know they need to be.
And I hear, I'm around these people, and I'm like, wow. Really?
I won't be no socialist. They're going to come take my guns and make me be an atheist. And then I won't get no pie in the sky when I die.
Oh. See, now I'm back to the Luncey and stuff. All right, right.
Well, I want to call timeout.
Right, exactly.
Timeout.
What?
I got a piece of audio for you. This is a recording that Bernie made.
Okay.
And it is him reading a speech by Eugene V. Debs, who was a heroic American. Eugene V. Debs took all the hate that this country could pass out and refused to back down. He said things like, as long as there is a lower class, I am of it. As long as there are prisons, I am in it. And up until John Anderson or was it Ross Perot got more third party votes for the presidency than anyone else. Among other things, his brand of socialism, and it was the genuine workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains socialism.
Whoa.
Brought sufficient popular pressure to bear that we wound up with, as we were discussing the other night, Social Security. So what I have here is a recording of Bernie from a tweet from October of 2019.
Bill Burr.
Posted by the Democratic Socialists of America.
Bill Burr.
This has not been manipulated in any way. It is simply a chunk of the reading.
Bernie.
Tell me what you think.
The little Bernie. That I am, the little that I am hoping to be, I owe to the socialist movement. It has given me my ideas and ideals, my principles and convictions, and I would not exchange one of them for all of Rockefeller's blood-stained dollars.
In 1979, Bernie Sanders produced a documentary on the legendary socialist and trade union leader Eugene V. Debs. This is him reading from Debs' 1918 Canton, Ohio speech.
It has taught me how to serve, a lesson to me of priceless value. It has taught me the ecstasy in the hand clasp of a comrade. It has enabled me to hold high communion with you
comrade.
And made it possible for me to take my place side by side with you in the great struggle for the better day. To multiply myself over and over again, to thrill with a fresh-born manhood, to feel life truly worthwhile, to open new avenues of vision, to spread out glorious vistas, to know that I am kin to all that throbs, to be class conscious, and to realize that, regardless of nationality, race, creed, color, or sex, every man, every woman who toils, who renders useful service, every member of the working class, without exception, is my comrade, my brother and sister, and that to serve them and their cause is the highest duty of my life.
If you know who Eugene V. Debs was, you know that he was a brilliant orator, and if you know what socialism is, you know what he's talking about there. On the other hand, if you're most of America, you hear that and shit your pants.
Who knows? Nobody knows about that. Man, I'm telling you. I had to hold, right. But I'm telling you, man, I hear these, like, I'm around folk, right? Okay, I'm here. I'm telling you, I'm on ground zero. So, I can't. Matter of fact, I got to hear people say, what's a nigga like you doing that job? I got to hear that shit every fucking day. At least one motherfucker comes in and I'm like, okay, I'm either ask you to leave or, okay. But anyway.
Again, the Democratic Socialists posted that on their Twitter account. And I know exactly what it is, and I don't have any problem with it whatsoever.
Right.
But the rest of America, or a great deal of America, will. And they've already, you know, again, as proven this evening, they've gone from calling him a socialist to calling him a communist, and now they're calling him, repeatedly, a Nazi.
This is one of my brain freeze. Right. This is
and
where
me,
my
and,
brain
and
freeze.
And
thank you.
And shit-eating America. And shit-eating America goes, well, of course he's a Nazi. The Nazis was socialists.
No. See, this is right. Okay, fine. I'm glad, man. See, you sparked it. Boom. You got it right back. All right. So this is the problem. They have a Frank Luntz. We need collectively. We don't have a good message maker here. You know, people respond to short shit that is meaningful and powerful. I mean, that's just psychology. That's just the way it is. So we have to have someone collectively, because nobody's doing it. Like, you don't want to have anybody doing it by themselves. So we have to coalesce around some good slogans. And so to do that, we have to identify the enemy.
Bernie, not as scary as you think.
Well, and when they say, because I'm telling you how these people approach me.
I know, but I have to make clear. I'm not saying any of this because I'm anti-Bernie. I'm up for him being the nominee. I'm absolutely up for him being the nominee. I will vote for him with more eagerness than I would a lot of other candidates. Flavio just said, but what if it's Sanders Warren? Would you still be worried about Bernie's age? Yes, because this country does not know what it's like to have a president die in office. The vast majority of this country has no idea the chaos, even if the passing is quiet and it's just a matter of the machine by the hospital bed suddenly going beep. And the doc goes, call it. And the other doc goes, 4:15 p.m. Even if it's that quiet, in this circumstance, in this America, in this 2020, this country will go goddamn bananas. The conspiracy. But it's not brilliant. It's terrifying. It's terrifying Facebook and Twitter, the paranoid conspiracy theories will pop up one after another like mushrooms after a warm spring rain, not mushrooms, toadstools. And Flavio says Bernie would govern well for 4 years and then Warren takes over. Well, Warren would have to run for office, and Pete would be there, and Amy would be there. And that's what I keep trying to explain, is that we will go through this all over again. And sitting over there on the other side, just waiting, will be that individual who has been referred to as a money-hungry mannequin, Ivanka Trump. Telling America it's time for us to have our first woman president.
And if you give
low IQ but high voting numbers America a chance to choose between blonde Ivanka and Granny Elizabeth, you know who's going to win. And then there's what Flavio says, Bernie would govern well for 4 years. I sincerely doubt he will be able to govern at all. That's not a health thing. That's a welcome to Constitution 101. Welcome to Constitution 101. The House or the Senate introduces a bill. If it passes one House, it goes to the other. They reconcile the two. They pass it. It goes to the president for the president's signature. The president can only do the only unilateral things that the president can do is issue executive orders. And we've been governing by executive order for a hell of a long time now. I mean, again, going back to 1948, that's how Truman managed to integrate the military, even though he couldn't integrate the schools. That had to be done by the Supreme Court. I'm not sanguine about Bernie's ability to so-called govern.
I just want to put bravery on what you said. All right. Just about Bernie, because this is the thing. This is why, like, when I looked and heard, because I had to tune out for like a day, because you know, all this is getting toxic. But when I saw how much he had beat Biden by, I mean, my God, I was like, okay, people are getting it. He's getting their momentum. But all right, now and think back, Bernie was the one every. When the pollsters went out, Quinnipiac and everybody else, you know, they said, well, who do you trust? Who do you think tells the truth? Bernie won that. He hit that shit hands down, but he couldn't be president. So that says something about us. But what I'm saying is that when he was asked about, you know, all these things you're asking for, he said, well, it's like, if you want a loaf of bread, you don't ask for crumbs. And that's the truth. See, this is what motherfuckers not fucking, they don't understand. Like, we understand politics, but at some point it is street. All right. So, you know, there's an academic side and there's a street side to this. So, fine. We want health care for everybody. We want a lot of stuff. It's like when you, all right, you know what? As a matter of fact, I'm going to make it academic. You know, when you're a professional and you go in that room in HR, you know, and you got a bid for a salary, you don't know what your coworkers are making. You go in there and you got to kind of price yourself. Like, what am I worth? That's what you have to do. You say, what am I worth? You know, I'm worth. And, you know, you write down a piece of paper. Or, you know, you say it out loud, however it goes. Because remember, you're going to be locked into that salary. We're talking about salary positions. You're going to be locked into that until somebody gives you a raise or whatever. So you really have to, you know what you're doing when you go in there. Now, this is what Bernie's talking about. You have to ask for two loaves. We're trying to get enough slices to make a few sandwiches. So that means we have to ask for four loaves of bread. By the time it goes to Congress and all this other bullshit, but you see, guess what? Progressively, he is all this stuff he was talking about. We're talking about it now. They thought that shit was far out. States had to indoctrinate, use his tech. They did
oh,
it now.
Look, I'm so old I can remember when not Bernie, but a presidential candidate named Dennis Kucinich in 2004. Said we and campaigned on, we have got to fix the broken healthcare system in this country, and was a co-sponsor of the Medicare for All bill that John Conyers introduced in the House Congress after Congress. Okay, John Conyers did that, but of course, let's not give the black guy credit.
Every year he brought it up.
Well, every Congress he introduced it as a bill. And Dennis was there and he happily signed off on it. And he said it didn't go nowhere. And they'd say, well, how are we going to pay for it? And he said, you know what? The money that the Pentagon loses and just can't find.
We have money for everything else. So. When these motherfuckers try to tell you we don't have any money, what? Wait a minute. No, you're sparking me again. Yeah, I'm washing clothes today. I was washing clothes, and I'm like, wow, you know what? Those soldiers are there, you know, Blackwater and Halliburton, they were paying like $50 for one load of clothes. So you telling me we can't have
healthcare? I'll take a Halliburger with cheese. That'll be $29.99.
Get the fuck out of here, man. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Well, you'll never go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. I think H.L. Mencken said that. He was not wrong. Well, by the way, as we run out of time, Steve in New York put a $10 challenge on the table. Steve would like to get us at least $20 further. So if somebody will match it, Steve's there with 10, but somebody else has to jump first. So thank you very kindly, Steve. Donnie's ticket, James in Illinois, writes, Donnie versus Bernie, whose heart keeps pumping and whose explodes? Elizabeth Warren will remain in the Senate, hopefully with enhanced power. She will be an ally. I think you're right on both counts. The thing is, what I was getting at earlier, Todd, and addressing what James said there, we are very we are very good at prolonging the life of presidents. We proved it with Reagan, and we're proving it now with Trump. The man is in obvious mental decline, dementia, whatever the cause. He's one package of bacon away from whatever. But you know what? They manage to get the dosage right every time he has to go out and turn himself into that that Marvel super Marvel supervillain, the orangutan.
I heard you last week when you were breaking it down and about his absolute absence. Look, don't get me wrong. I like to enjoy myself, but
God bless.
That's different than being a drug addict. He's a substance abuser. He's at work. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, he's you're absolutely. So you know they'll can see. I don't see. I think there's a strong likelihood that any of these octogenarians, if they become president, will be kept alive. But there's an old Star Trek episode, and we need a Star Trek reference. In fact, Lee referenced it, I think, last week, where there's a guy, and he's, you know, he's the leader of a planetary people on, you know, Norblap 9 or whatever, and I can't think of the episode right off the top of my head. If Lee's still listening, he'll tell me. But you know, the guy's functionally not there anymore. He's just propped up with, he's propped up and kept alive with some sort of, you know, medical magic. And he's not, and the machinery of government is just sort of functioning around him or in spite of him. Until, you know, it begins to disintegrate. But I don't want to, I got to tell you, I don't want to go through this again in 2024. I'd like to have an incumbent we can run for a second term. I don't think Bloomy or Biden or Bernie are going to be able to. Because look how hard a time they're having propping up a 24 or a 74-year-old drug abuser.
Oh, that.
And okay, here's an idea. Shorty in LA says Bernie can win with Julian Castro. Bernie has to start speaking against his so-called deal, this so-called deal of the century.
Who is that?
Julian Castro. That's Shorty in LA.
No, I'm saying who sent that in, because that was
That's Shorty from LA sending that in. That's Shorty from LA.
Shorty. Yeah, because think about it. That's the truth. That man had cabinet experience. You look at what he was saying. They wanted to X him out quick, and he made a lot of sense. But it was just, see, that shows you the appetite. We're in a different, man, I'm telling you. This is the last grasp of white. It's a whole, you know, we're just in a cauldron of, I hate to use that word again. We're just in a bucket of just mess right now. It's a whole lot going on. It's just too much going on right now. I don't know. And when I say that, I mean, the world has changed. Number one, the world's changed. The climate has changed. Demographics are changing. You know, it's like everything. It's like when you're an adolescent and you have a pimple, and it's so sensitive. It's like right there, you want to pop it, and you can feel it. It's up. It's about to pop.
Yeah. Well, here we are. We've covered it. We've covered a lot of ground, and you know what? We can kind of loop it back to the very beginning, Todd.
What's up?
We started with this. We started this more on Monday with Chris Matthews comparing Bernie to the Nazis. Well, this evening, I guess we got as much as we're going to get. And he apologized. So, senior advisor to the Sanders campaign, Chuck Rocha, R-O-C-H-A, was overdoing an interview on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, go figure, when they got the news. Here it is.
Chris Matthews and his characterization of how Bernie Sanders is doing, you know, comparing it to the Nazis' invasion of France. Let's listen to his apology that just happened a couple minutes ago.
Senator Sanders, I'm sorry for comparing anything from that tragic era in which so many suffered, especially the Jewish people, to an electoral result in which you were the well-deserved winner. This is going to be a hard-fought, heated campaign of ideas. In the days and weeks and months ahead, I will strive to do a better job myself of elevating the political discussion.
What's your reaction to that?
Look, we all get hot and say things in a moment. I'm glad Chris apologized. I think it's a good thing to do. I think we need to all rise above it. It is going to be a heated contest, and we all get mad sometimes. I'm from Texas. I get mad a lot of times. But, you know, we got to move on and get past it. I'm glad he said what he had to say. I'm tired of folks on Twitter fighting with each other. It's time to win this election.
All right, let's talk about the...
You can't fault him for that. I mean, I don't know what he's doing. Well, I know why he's from Texas, so they put him on Fox hoping to bring along some disaffected Trump voters, I guess. I tend to think they're unicorns, but maybe they're not.
I didn't hear a whole lot of substance from that.
You mean from Chris Matthews?
That was a bunch of nonsense. That was not in the policy.
No, that was, you know.
I mean, that's my first explanation.
I said some shit, and my bosses said that in this case, there was such a thing as bad PR. Let's hear that non-apology again.
Senator Sanders, I'm sorry for comparing anything from that tragic era in which so many suffered, especially the Jewish people, to an electoral result in which you were the well-deserved winner.
Sure, that's sure not the same thing as, wow, I said something monumentally stupid. I am so sorry, not just to Senator Sanders, but to all the people who knock on doors and wear the soles of their shoes out trying to make what they believe will be a better America. I'm sorry.
You know what? I'm so sorry I laughed like that, man. I'm flabbergasted. Like, what? Like that?
He couldn't even... Did you hear him at any point? He said, "In which so many people suffered. How about died?
None of that,
including your kinfolk, Bernie.
Kinfolk.
Sorry about that whole Holocaust thingy.
Yeah, it's not my fault that this gold ring on my finger came from your teeth, but that's okay."
That. All right, we're out of here, Todd.
All right.
Talk to you later, man. Good conversation.
All right.
Bye. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Well, and we got over a whole bunch of ground tonight because there was a whole bunch of morons over the weekend. And that's why we put morons on Monday. Oh, and just in case wait a sec. This is as close as I'll ever get to feeling sorry for Donald Trump. Just a little funny on the way out the door. Apparently, well, we all know how Gorky Pig. God, I love that.
We all know how he likes his steaks, burnt with ketchup. And foreign leaders have gone to great lengths to try to meet his dietary requirements. Saudi, Singapore, they gave him a little piece of formerly beef burnt to carbon and some tiny bottles of ketchup. But when he was in Gujarat state and Agra and Delhi in India, they all have Hindu majorities and cattle are, you know, sacred. And you don't eat cattle and you don't eat meat. Well, they had their big rally. But here's the funny part. Narendra Modi is a vegetarian, and he planned a vegetarian feast for Nitwit Nero. A person close to the president, this is the CNN article, who has dined with him on several occasions, said Trump has salad with a meal every now and then, but other than that, quote, I have never seen him eat a vegetable. That's funny. So that's where we find ourselves at the end of this here Moran Monday. I'm sure we'll have some carryover Morans for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Remember, it's a short broadcast week. I'll be gone Thursday and Friday. So we'll try to finish up February in 3 days, which is going to be difficult. It's made more so now. But Steve in New York has a $10 challenge on the table. And other than that, we reduced the week's fundraising by, it's down to, what was it? It's down to 9:45. If someone meets Steve's challenge, it'll be down to 9:25. We'll get along as best we can. If the overnight crew hears it, be mighty nice to have a little help. Thank you. On the way out the door, Brother Deacon Asa says, let me translate Tweety Bird's apology into English. The GU lawyers are at MSNBC told me to take it back. That is probably minus the dramatic reading and the dramatic writing and dialogue. He's channeling Lewis Black there. It's probably closer to the truth, as James in Illinois points out. Matthews got threatened by corporate. So thanks to everybody who popped into the chat room this evening. Thanks Anatole and Dowhead and Hoghead and Richard and Roger. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to each and every one of you who keeps the program on the air after these many years, whether by subscription via PayPal or Patreon, both, and a la carte contributions during the week. Thank you all the way around. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.